I want to start by being completely honest with you. I did not prepare for this. Nevertheless, don't walk away, because not preparing does not mean that we can't get some, come on in, some very good stuff from today's talk. Although part of me was frustrated with myself that I didn't prepare more, the truth is, really, there's been a lot of incredible top-down experiences that we've had in the last day. Oh no, next one, the other one.
Science lab.
But for this hour, what I'd really like to hear, I'm going to talk a little bit about my experience, and then what I'd like to do is facilitate more, because no question, all that we've learned today and yesterday and experience is bringing up stuff for each of us in our own worlds, in our own cure of worlds. So I'm not just excusing myself that I didn't prepare, although I'm a little bit frustrated that I didn't prepare more. But what I really want to do is hear from you. What are you hearing, and what's it bringing up for you? And, you know, without over-dominating, I want to hear from, you know, not necessarily each person, but whoever wants to really get out there. This is what's bothering me. This is where I feel I need to work on. This is the issue that's largest for me. I'm not really interested in talking to you about my experience if my experience isn't going to be what you need to move forward in your particular world. So everybody's coming from, I mean, there are certain truths that are absolute, and I want to talk about them today. But I'd also really like to hear what's coming up for you from this conference. What is resonating with you? What do you realize you need to do? Where do you feel you're held back? What is in your control? What's not in your control? What are the issues that you're facing? I do feel that when it comes to community Kirov, the first place to start is within yourself. It's, you know, in coaching, we call it self-management or self-awareness as a life coach. What that really means is anything that I'm perceiving out there that I'm critical of, that I'm judgmental of, any time that I'm feeling insecure or I feel I can't get out there and talk about my programs, any time I'm uncomfortable talking to something with someone, something's going on within me. And so what I really want to start with today, come on in, is...
You're late.
That's okay. What I want to... Elisa, I was saying that I didn't prepare well. But I will say a little caveat about not preparing. I don't want this to be a top-down experience. I really do want to hear from people what's going on for them. And I started by saying that I think that the most important thing in Kirov is to know where you personally are at and what's holding you back from feeling confident, from feeling that you have a jewel that you want to transmit to other people with love and respect for them. What's holding you back from making deep relationships? What's keeping you behind that ridiculous computer instead of calling, instead of meeting for coffee, instead of genuinely connecting to people? What's keeping you behind your computer, emailing yet another program that we're sending out but not making the phone calls, not reaching out? What's keeping you from who you really want to be in Community Kirov? And of course, there's a question that precedes that, which is, who do you really want to be in Community Kirov? What kind of person do you want to be? What are your goals? And who do you want to be in relationship to these people? What's your role? How do you want to relate to them? How do you want them to perceive you? And that's why self-management is so important. What's going on for me? Why am I so critical of this? Why am I so negative about this? Why am I insecure about, you know, calling? Why am I having a hard time calling this person? Right? It's very important to understand that, you know, all of our feelings in community care of, you know, they supply us with information about ourselves. They really do supply us with information about ourselves. What do I need to work on? You know, as we've learned before, the whole concept of chesed is concentric, and it starts with yourself. And that means taking care of yourself, but it also means understanding yourself within your community. What's holding me back? Why am I so shy? Why am I ambivalent? Why am I so judgmental? why aren't I moving forward? Why, you know, why do I keep replaying the same tape about why nothing's working? So I'd like to open, I don't want this to be a top-down experience. I really want to hear from you. I'd like this to be a session where if something is really on your mind, we can talk about it. And we can really, you know, kind of create almost like, instead of a, you know, just a sure or a receival, you know, just really kind of hear where each other's at, hear what's going on for people, and maybe brainstorm or just talk about it a little bit, and feel like when you leave, you know, this incredible conference, some of the things that have really been holding you back have maybe not been resolved, but you've kind of aired them out, and you sort of figured out a little bit about where you need to go next. So, Sarah.
Okay, yeah. So I find for myself, I don't know if anybody experiences the same situation, where I spend so much time in Kiruv that, you know what, I haven't been able to develop the relationships with religious people in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Not that they're not my friends, like I could count yeah. people, but I can maybe have one or two people who are probably not the mainstream kind of people that are my friends. More the, you know, my friends are more the fringe people who are religious and not, you know, they don't look necessarily like me. So that's how I'm also instilling a more relationship with them. So is this the form I'm supposed to be discussing this with? So, you know, like either it's a, you know, so my husband says, oh, I should go to more firm events and, you know, like whatever, but I see if I go to those events, people don't bother talking to me either. Mm-hmm. So like,
Ruchi, you were talking about this yesterday. You're sort of in two worlds, right?
And I'm a very friendly person. Okay, I'm a pretty nice person. See, I don't necessarily do, like, I'm so busy
cool
in my own little world that maybe I'm so, well, listen, I do have 7 children. I do have, I hear full time. I have my son is, unfortunately, he's 6, so like I spend a lot of time also with that. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of full time jobs, mm-hmm. and so I do, okay, so I can excuse myself a little bit for why I'm not devoting my attention to the front community, but they also need a lot of work, but I don't have time to do everything. I can't, you know, like, I can't fix everything, even though I'd love to. I take out my toolbox all the time, and it's just, it doesn't work. But I'm looking for more from relationship mm-hmm. support. That's mm-hmm. really what I would personally like. And I,
right.
See, for me, this is the first time I've lived, or not true, but in the most recent years that I've lived in a firm community. So mm-hmm. usually we've been in the place where we've been like the only thing that people would turn to us. I mean,
right.
Des Moines, Iowa, we had a community outreach program.
So right, so like getting to the bottom line of what I'm hearing you say is like you're straddling different worlds. So the issue that I'm hearing come up for you is how to have a normal, normative from experience with the from community, to feel that you're part of it.
Right.
To feel that,
or maybe, you know, like I made friends in many places. So like now, listen, like I moved to Milwaukee. I was there in Milwaukee 1 year for architecture. Mm-hmm. So I met Allie and I was able to make friends. So I don't have a problem really making friends. It's just a matter of like I understand from people are in their own little world, and unless they become your like best friend kind of thing, and then you become into their little, you know, in their circle. So maybe give us, I don't know, maybe you have some information.
So what's the question? Yeah. If you could phrase like the kind of,
you
not
even,
they
help me, I
want them to become more involved with your project, or you want to become more involved in their lives?
Like, no, I don't want them to become my project, even though I see lots of things that need to be.
No,
I want more support.
Listen, if I ask,
yeah.
Oh, good. Can you help me?
I totally relate, and I have like two specific
circle.
Here.
Okay, Elise is rightfully saying. Yeah. Elise, do you mind if we have a top-down experience like this? I mean, not top-down. I mean, a peer. Let's put in a circle. Great idea. Super idea. Yeah, but it's good. It's good. It's good to be in a circle. That's right. No, you know what? No, so, okay, now a little rule of this connection experience, to get the most out of it, what I really want to create is an environment where we're really focused on the person who's speaking. Even if the issue isn't so completely relevant for you, like really, you know, I don't want to compartmentalize. I don't want some people to be in conversation. I want to focus on what's going on, what's really real for the person, hear it, genuinely listen to it, and, you know, and until, you know, and then from the experience that many of you have had, you know, then it's really your turn to share this, that you've experienced a similar thing and what's helped you. So just really clarify for you, like at the end of the day, what's really the issue for you, and what do you want to see happen?
Okay, so what I have done,
Ellie, would you move up?
Yes.
So here's my thing. I want somebody to care that I'm alive. That's
no, I hear it. You want to be recognized.
Like,
right.
I want some people to care.
What
the heck
is I saying? That's what I think I hear her saying.
I think also like... Okay, I think also maybe validating what you're doing, like as important work.
Oh, no. I have no problem. I have people in my secular community, they tell me every day.
No, but
that
the
they, I have changed their life, and I have, you know, I keep a file, actually, ladies. I have a file of things that, you know, thank you notes from people from over the years, and we have so much nachas from many different things. So I don't have a problem. That's not my problem. I want somebody, you know.
That's okay. You know, you're in. You're.
You know, I probably understand.
You know what, we've
been,
you know what, Sarah, I think I speak for myself, and I think I bet I speak for a lot of people that here, no, it's okay, you know what, you're human. I think I speak for a lot of people that hearing all this stuff brings up personal feelings of how you feel about how your life is going. And, you know, so
well,
you
keep it together very well, so, and I'm always calm, and, you know, whatever.
It's okay. So get to the core of like what you would really like to see, and then open up. Ruchi, I think, wanted to say something. I think Rachel wanted to say something, and yeah.
I want to say something.
Okay,
too.
So Rachel, I saw you raising your hand, and then we'll get to the two of you. So yeah.
Okay. So first of all, I think it's great that you even recognize the Beth Anish, because what I've seen is.
I asked for it not to be, but Effie feels like it should be.
No.
Bothering you, sir.
No, what? I'm really talking about somebody just picking up the phone and saying, hi, how are you doing?
Right.
Let's
right.
go to this event tonight.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's not like I don't need a lot. I'm not that
right.
needy. I'm really
so
not.
So in my community, I'm in those two different worlds. So I'm friends with all the Kola lights, like really friends with them, meaning like, you know, they're coming over and they're borrowing sugar and they drove into my chasana and then I have my other life. Like, that's why I...
What
Ruchi said, I mm-hmm. so relate. But it wasn't easy to develop those Kola people, those relationships, and I'll tell you why. And I could have stopped early, which I think is what a lot of people did. First of all, there's an age difference. They're younger than me. Second of all, they're less mature. Third of all, I think this is the big thing, and I think this may be what you might be feeling, is that they don't understand what I do at all. They don't value it. And not only that, but they don't realize that they're the nicest people in the world. They'll say to me, if I say something, because it is my life, like, oh, last night, where were you last night? Oh, I was giving a class on the... That's so weird.
What?
That's what they'll say. Yeah, because
why?
They just think it's funny. Okay, they just like, it's so weird that you do that. It's not that they really think I'm weird. It's really that they're envious, I think.
Hold on, guys. We're going to get a lot more out of it if we really let a person speak. And the person who's speaking, to just be mindful that this is going to bring up like a lot of feelings in a lot of people. So to manage time a little bit and, you know, say, really get to the essence of what's on your mind and then give room for another person to speak. So I'm hearing you.
I'm saying that if you're willing to overcome, and I just let that go. It hurts, but I let it go in lieu of the bigger picture, and then I do have those good relationships now. I do see what they're good at and what's nice about them, and I just kind of ignore that part of them that really doesn't understand that part of my life. And that part of my life, I get validation from Lauren or from Ayala or from the other people that I work with. And I kind of learned how to compartmentalize my relationships, but I am very, very close to them in a different way. Like, we'll talk about our shmooze recipes or whatever, and then I'll talk about what really matters to me in life, right, with my other friends. And so I think that if you could get over that hurt of that, it doesn't...
I probably am over it now. Okay. Now that I just, like, found out. I'm
all confused. Thank you very much. This is, like, group therapy.
But I could relate. I mean, since these are real issues for all of us.
They are real issues. They are real issues of feeling like... I mean, when you said it, Rahi, yesterday... straddling two worlds, feeling like you're not really in either one. But I think you were wanting to talk about something from your experience.
Well, I'll just add in short. So this totally comes out on a practical level. First of all, how I choose to spend my evening. So you touched on this. You know, I have, let's say, 6 evenings out of the week. So some of them I want to be home with my kids. Right? Some of them I have to teach because I have classes going on. Then there's a VART, there's a Sheva Brachos, there's a this, there's a that. And I'm like... do I ditch and be a good mother? Do I go and be a firm community member? Because I feel like I have an achrayus to my own neshama to be involved in the firm community. Otherwise, I'm ostracizing myself. So that's a total practical.
Mm-hmm. No, it's very helpful.
Building partners.
Yeah.
Building partners. That's how I justify it. Going to. And then the other very specific dilemma, and please don't laugh at me, is how I dress.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I have an obligation to look cute.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in Europe, you have an obligation to
you succeeded. You're very cute.
Thank you. It's a mitzvah. But by the same token, I totally want to be tzniyas, and then, you know, I have these teenagers. Right. So like, I seriously, I live in two worlds. If I would go to do carpool like this, I would feel weird.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If I would go to a Kirov event not like this, I would feel weird. So I'm looking in my closet, and I'm like,
what day? Who am I today? It's funny, because I just went to Torah Masora, and I have to wear all black there, because, you know,
yes.
like, see my pink sparkly shoes, they did not come out for Torah Masora.
That's so sad.
And that's the environment.
And I'm teaching a class, and I have carpool, and then I have, like, conferences in the evening, and then, let's say I want to work out. Okay, that's a whole separate issue. I'm like, okay, do I have to change 4 times? This is ridiculous. So I really do feel like I'm totally living in two worlds. Okay, so that's number 2. And then the other thing that I just wanted to... who can relate to this? Wait a second.
Totally, absolutely.
Hey. Changing 3 times
like,
a day.
Be on the phone with our Rav, okay? So he's like, there's barely a word out of his mouth that's not Yiddish or Aramaic. Okay? Then he's talking to his buddy, and they're going out, like, during a service to meet Chuba, they're going to the basketball game because he has to, okay? And he's like, using all his
dude.
Targets. I'm like, who is this man? So it's like, it's both of us. And then the other thing that I just wanted to relate to was what you said about that's so weird. Like, when you tell, so I find in the firm community, I get 2 distinct reactions to my Kirov activities. Some people think it's so cool. And they're, like, so admiring, and they love it. And they're like, oh, you live this glamorous life, and it's so long, and it's so cool. And that's nice. But by the same time, I feel like there's this big gap.
Right.
You don't have a clue. Then
but
there's the other
glamorous.
Side.
Over
there.
It's the romantic. It's that romantic vision that we imagined at the beginning, I think. It's that same romantic vision. And
it might come down to what Russell said, a little bit of envy. There might be the envy factor.
Two ladies that showed up, and one of them's like, very strange. You know?
Okay, keep it. Okay, Rafi, keep going. No, let's keep it. I want. want to keep it very focused because it's funny, and like we're going to bring up so much funny stuff, and we're all going to relate. But it's really important to keep focused.
And you're not going to crutch to them about all your Kiro baggage, and you know. Okay, fine. The other reaction that I get is, so are you doing like a God dating and marriage seminar? Like, they won't come out to me and say that's so weird. But it's like, okay. And by the way, I get the same thing for my teenage kids. My teenage kids, they, you know, I live in Cleveland, I live in like a regular mainstream community. They go to like a pretty firm school. Like, a lot of parents are like firmer than me. And believe it or not.
No way.
They don't change three times
so
a day.
Even my
kids, they just wear black. They just always.
Like, no spark.
Like kind of sarcastic comments from my kids. Like, okay, so who are we having for Shabbos? Are we having like Brian and Cindy? Oh, we could talk about Hillary. Okay. And I'm like, that's it. That represents the other kind of reaction that I get from people. So
we're also
living
in two worlds.
Because
the kids.
Yes.
Because teenagers
especially
do the same thing, is they look at things in black and white. And that's what a lot of people that we talk with in our community look at things in black and white. And we are all like gray and color or whatever. You know?
Or pink.
Or orange.
Orange does you a favorite color.
Kaya. One person at a time.
Okay. Because, you know, it's so funny because I think when we're sitting in this room, there's some people, like yesterday said, well, I'm lucky because I live in a firm community.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's harder to do community. Because I feel like in a place like, you know, say Cleveland, which I know the community, they're not Kiro friendly. Okay. It's probably better than when I was younger. But a lot of these yeshivish communities, okay, I don't want to focus on
them.
So I'm just saying, okay, a lot of yeshivish communities are in theory Kiro friendly, but in reality are not.
Someone else's community.
So what ends up happening to us?
Someone else's community, but don't bring
funny people to my
backyard.
I want to point that out because I think sometimes when the women are talking, and somebody, like yesterday when you were saying that, I was thinking that, because you were saying, wow, it's so great, I live in a firm community, I'm not isolated, and I was thinking, sometimes you're isolated, you might be better in a certain way, because there is a challenge when you live in a firm community and you're the care person, and the firmer, the more yeshivish the community, which is great for your kids in terms of their pinuch, etc., I think the harder it is.
The modern one.
It is.
I also find, like, in small towns, like, instance, my kids are the only firm kids in their school, so it's very easy to explain some of the differences because it's obvious. You know, they see it blatantly every day. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to Aiden's house because his Christmas tree is up, and he doesn't want me to come when his Christmas tree is up. Okay, Mom? Okay, so tell Aiden to come over here. You know, so it's very obvious. So it could be easier even when you're the only one because it's easy to explain.
But what we're also too is that sometimes it undermines your Kiro efforts. Like, my people could be inspired by a Passover class that I get and they want to go to the kosher grocery store, and then they bump into people who look at them like they're from Mars, and it undermines months and months of
right.
work.
It's like the opposite of one Shabbos. Mm-hmm.
Well, Unger is, you know.
I will not take that.
Now, given, like, getting back to what Rachel said, that there might be feelings of inadequacy or envy when they see you, it's not so simple. They're not just so behind judgment, there's always insecurity. Always. So when they see Ruchi, they see, or Rachel, or whomever, or Sarah, they see someone who's doing something that they just can't do. They're either to this, or they're to that, or they could never do it. So how do you create in somebody else, first of all, an awareness of you in an authentic way, that they really understand what you're doing, and also recognizing that they are seeing you that way, the gap, or, you know, making jokes about it, ultimately because it makes them feel inadequate in some way. So how do you close that bridge a little bit between people who make little jokes or who don't call or who don't validate or who don't. How do you make yourself known to the firm community? What you're doing authentically? What's interesting to you? You know, it's easy for us to say, like, this is what it's like for me, and punk, you know, that's it. But the truth is, the only reason they're behaving this way is because you bring up for them some feeling of inadequacy.
Or fear.
Or something. So yeah. Okay. So sorry. Yeah. And then
I believe that we've done a good job in the community, bridging the gap. Because my husband has a record. He's learned in Kolo many years. The Rosh Kolo was his Rebbe at one time. So it worked out well because, you know, my husband could not come into this position. He was able to set himself up, set our organization up better in the Frum community than maybe somebody else without the
background.
The years of Torah behind him. So so that was good, and also the results that we've produced. I mean, when Frum people come to our events, and it's 80% not Frum and 20% for the Frum community, they see, they've never seen those people before, and they're coming to a Torah, a class. And even though, like, the first events that we had, people said, but he didn't mention the word Torah. And so he said, but he doesn't have to say it's Torah. It just is. And who cares? And if they can go home and live a better life because of it, isn't that wonderful? But anyway, so I know that the I just say it's results driven. So that's
you're saying that them seeing the results will give them the respect.
It's me, so it's probably just peace, our own in me, so I have to really work on myself.
What do you have to work on?
Become a better person. Like, saying what, like when I was more focused on making, let's say, relationships for myself, I would call people and say, oh, are you going tonight? Do you want to go with me? So I probably just have to do it myself if I want it, I'm going to have to create it.
Right.
So I'm telling you, ladies, there is like, thank you for the support, and I know most of my issues are just looking inside of me and just saying, okay, I have to do something different.
Interesting.
I can't just complain about it. I have to be action.
Yeah.
Solution oriented.
Right.
Really,
great. Okay, Ayala.
So
yes. Okay. Eliza.
I just wanted to share a little bit because I think there's another issue underlying which I've certainly felt, and that's being there is a sense of being recognized as somebody who probably knew to care about you. That's what I was hearing.
I got that big hug here. So that was good.
Right, for instance, I had a guy, a regular guest who, after showers, and said, Eliza, you've outdone yourself again. He's complimenting me, right?
Right.
I don't know how you do it. So my inside voice is like, I know how I do it. I spend 3 days a week doing this while you're working, so you can come to my house and eat it, and then leave it, and I'll clean up after you go. That's how I do it. It's in your stomach. That's where my stomach is. I'm coming all the time and I don't have a chance to read it.
Yeah,
so I guess that feeling of when did you hear me ever? Like, I'm constantly giving, constantly calling, constantly asking, who calls to say, how are you?
Nobody.
No one calls to say, how are you?
So, Eliza, let's just stay on this topic, because looking inward is always the answer. So what do you... Given that that's the reality, what do you do so you feel I'm nurtured enough that I can give and I can play that role? What does it take for you to feel recognized and validated and nurtured enough that you can go out and be like this constant giver and constant light?
So,
what?
I trust Hashem to love me. That's really what it is, because I know He knows everything for me. So I have to redo that. I have a physical file.
You know what?
Hashem
loves me. I know that.
I have a T-Grain physical file. So I save all my thank you. Anytime somebody sends me something, even if they just say great class, but occasionally I do get nice letters from people. My T-Y.
What do you call it?
T-Y. Thank you.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, I have a thank you.
That's what's called on the side of my computer. All the emails. I have an actual physical file folder and an email file folder called
Okay, hold on. We're gonna keep it in order. Wait, hold on 1 second. Rachel and Ayala, right?
I just think that this brings up a very important issue. How are women in our communities? And I think that sometimes people look at us like, well, we're always the one running the event, doing this, giving this. So
bless
they don't
you.
Think that
bless
we need
it.
It.
Right.
They don't think that she needs someone to go to the.
We don't delegate.
Because she's busy all the time and she's running the thing, So I think that, at Eliza, they don't think you need help because you're the one who helps everybody else. And again, I have a lot because.
So I just want to, one thing, it happens to be that I call people for Shabbos, in other words, for Shabbos, and it happens, a woman started calling me, like one of my, women who were coming in with me, actually, she started calling me, and I didn't even know what to do with it, kind of thing. So it's really, so it's my piece, Sarah, because so she's calling me to wish me good Shabbos, because she wasn't on my list for that week, so, and it was like,
Hey, it's
okay, so what I
wait,
like, what? It was different. Okay, I didn't have a plan to, like, what was I going to talk about or whatever. But anyway, so
Rachel, finish up. Yeah.
But I think perhaps one of the answers is, how did you do it? Is that show yourself. Like, don't be afraid of showing your weaknesses. You're not a powerhouse. Like, I'm very real with my friends. And my friends, yeah. Like, let's say I was making a class in Lakewood, and my friends were in Ottawa. And I called them up. I said, I was crying last night because I realized, like, I'm not going to have my friends there. Mm-hmm. At class, and like, even though I have tons of people that I know in New York and everything, but the people in Ottawa, like, mean a lot to me.
Okay, sorry.
And they were shocked. Like, oh, I need and they came, the whole
car mm-hmm. So making yourself open and asking for what you need. Because on some level, they're perceiving you in a way that's untouchable. So you're making yourself real and relatable and asking for what you need. And showing them that they can contribute to you, that it's not a one-way street, that the channels of giving go both ways. Just like you give to the community, they can give to you. So that's, I hear that. That's very powerful. You wanted to say something?
Well, first of all, I think sharing with people what you do on, like, a level where they can even, like, do, like, a mashahu of it. Like, I don't know, like, Julie, you inspire me very much that you're just, like, nobody taught you how to be Kiro. You're like, okay, I have neighbors. Hi, you know? So, When somebody tells me, like, oh, wow, you're amazing that you do that, and, I'll say something like, I just see opportunities, and, like, don't you ever, like, bump into somebody in the supermarket who bagels you, who says, oh, I went to yeshiva one time, you just, like, have a conversation with them, and I find, like, they so appreciate that, so, to make it, like, more, like, relatable to them, that was one thing I was thinking. Oh, and then the other thing I was thinking of is that, like, I don't live near from people, so my kids go to school 45 minutes away, and a lot of times I do, like, rely on people, one kid has a birthday party at 2 and the next kid has a birthday party at 4 and I'm not driving to Boca 4 times in one day. So, so I do rely on people to have a play date or can you watch her for the extra 2 hours, So one of my friends who happens to be a Chafetz Chaim lady, so she's one of those people that does Kirov in the supermarket, so she once said to me, when I thanked her so much, she said, oh, that's my part in your work, that's
beautiful.
My contribution. And so I've said that to people, like, when I'm thanking them, and I'll tell them, this is such a support for me for what I do. And,
wow.
Like, that makes them feel that they're really a part
they
of
can
the
do
project.
It. They can do right. it. You're right. That's so powerful. You're showing them that you're not something that they have it in them too.
Right.
They're making fun of you or criticizing you or holding you at bay because you bring about them feelings of I can't do it.
That's
so when you show them you absolutely can do this. You can do this. You automatically create, like, an awareness of themselves as, so that's what I'm hearing from you, is just, like, bridging that gap by showing them it's in them, too. All right, what else is coming up for people on a separate note? Anything else maybe in another way that might be coming up? Okay, so we'll take Esty and then Sarah.
Look to the right, because there's some people.
I'm sorry, this has more bangs than this. I don't like it. Okay, Esty.
Sometimes people don't even bother to respond to your email. You'll send somebody, like, a text, like, hi, do you guys want to come for Shabbos? You don't even hear anything back. And then next time you meet, they meet you, they're like, oh, how you doing? How's the kids? I haven't heard from you. And just the idea of, like, how can you just, like, keep on going when you're getting, rejected all the time. And the typical, one answer that I could just give myself is look at the good things. Look at all the people who do come. Look at all the people who do respond. But just in general, it's really hard to, like, constantly, trying to reach out to people and not necessarily having them respond in the way that you feel that they should.
Yeah. 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 What do people think about this? They're dealing with the constant, especially with tech. Right. Who doesn't? All right. First of all, you're in good hands, honey. You're surrounded by people. Especially with technology the way it is, not hearing from people, being rejected, constantly feeling like you have so much to offer and there's so few people who take you up on it.
So many
wide variety of ways to experience feeling rejection. Baruch Hashem. Right. So what comes up for people in terms of dealing with the feeling of either rejection or apathy or like disinterest? And also I would add to Esty's point, seeing your husband get rejected a lot. That also hurts.
No, I'm constantly having to tell my husband. He's like, I don't understand. He's the person. He sent them a text. Like, you don't have to answer the second you're talking to me. You can have to one second. He's like, but he thinks that it's like the right thing. Someone's trying to communicate with you. I'm constantly telling him, like, maybe they're busy. Maybe they're this. Just keep trying. Just keep trying. It's so hard for him to just keep going. Like, and they just don't answer. And I'll call them, and they'll be so nice on the phone. And then the next 10 times he'll try to call them, they just ignore his phone call. Send a text or call from my cell phone, like, you know, you get people
block
to just
answer,
like, just come on, it's like, listen to me, just give me the time of day, and then if you don't like me, you don't have to, you know, but it's like that.
It's tough.
Ellie?
Yes. So hold on, I'm moving my bank, one second.
Yes. I always find that very optimistic. I was, you know, on Facebook, people answer maybe.
Right.
They just don't want to say no.
Even if they say yes to that, I think I'm going to have a huge group, a huge crowd. I was like, I really think that this could be a big group, and then as a guest or whatever, it's disappointing.
Right.
And they don't actually, like the people that you thought were going to come, even the people who said yes on Facebook or on the phone, they don't come, but other people maybe show up that didn't.
So let's get tachlis oriented. How do you deal with the inevitable feeling of constantly feeling up against a wall? Yeah,
So I find that for myself, right? Like, I find I'm also one of the, like, I try to think about how I deal in the opposite version of the situation, right? I'm calling lots of people, but lots of people are also calling me and inviting me to things. And I am really nice when they talk to me on the phone. And I realize that, like, maybe they just don't have time for everything. Like, everyone is so inundated with so many things they're doing, and they're so involved with so many other things in their lives that they probably, it's very well intentioned, these maybes on Facebook and like the talking to you for 5 minutes on the phone and like hoping for, like, I would love to come to your thing. Maybe I, like, yeah, sure, I'll try to make it. And then, like, of course, you get there and like a million things happen, whatever. So I try to just, it's like hard because, like, you can't always be the first person to say, I just have to focus on the people who said yes, you know, like, don't focus on the people who said no. But I just think about the fact that, like, sometimes I'm the person who says no, and sometimes mm-hmm. I'm the person who flakes out or, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. can't make it or whatever. And I try to think about, okay, what was going on with me that, like, made me flake out, that made me, right. was nice on the phone and then ignored the next 5 phone calls, you know, like, what did I not have time for? And think
that's
about,
an interesting
maybe they just didn't have time.
So you're
maybe
looking at how you say no and recognizing that it's not negative,
it's
or
negative,
you're not down on
that,
right? Right, right. Okay, Rita. Yeah, Rita, and then, yeah, Shayna.
Is it direct? No, I just think that, like, if I really believe in something or I'm really connected to a person, so then I will make extra effort to be there. But, like, so I think the same for them. So if they're really connected to you, they will try their hardest to be there.
Mm-hmm.
It's the new people or the people you don't have, like, a lot to do with, or the friend's friend, you know, that you should be there. That's the truth.
Yeah.
But, like, let's say I had a book signing. Somebody wrote a book and they invited me, and she comes to my class, and I felt like I had to go. I was so zonked. It was Thursday night, right before, you know. And I fell asleep at 6 o'clock, and it was at 8 o'clock, you know, I took a little nap, and I came late to it, but I showed up. Even mm-hmm. if I came at the end and I bought her book, I was there. Even if I sort of late because I came late. But I'm saying,
what?
So people, like, I don't find that same dedication for people. Maybe if they're extremely connected to you, but otherwise...
Yeah, I mean, Ruth and Rena. Oh, sorry. Yeah, Ruth. Oh, wait, Rena, I think you were first, and then Ruth.
I don't have an answer. I just want to make a separation between feeling frustrated and feeling like a failure. Because we can be frustrated that we're not seeing the results that we want and that people are rejecting us and not coming to
mm-hmm.
the
restaurants
and when you make all the food for them for Shabbos and then they just end up not even making it to Shul because they wanted to sleep late that day,
right.
I feel like a failure. We do have those Kazakh files, which is a brilliant idea, and we do have those success stories, and we do have all the people that we are actually influencing and having an impression on. So we should be careful in how we feel inside about recognize I'm frustrated, but I'm still successful, and don't let it get
beautiful.
Me down. And not
beautiful. Beautiful. That's a very powerful technique for not personalizing it and not letting
it's not
it.
Not personal. It's not
right.
You. It's they're lazy. They're tired. They don't feel like getting up off the couch. They're in a flaky state.
That's Dal Huskos for you. They're lazy. That's the mitzvah of Titus. They're actually jerks, but never mind. But Brochashem.
I like that.
All right, Ruth.
I mean, I think that we all know this. Why we're doing what we're doing is this is the state of the Jewish people. All the people that we're dealing with, like, they don't recognize how important Torah is in their life.
No.
So that's why we're not. It's as if we're calling them like comprehensive.
Yeah.
So they don't recognize it. You know, we know, right? The Almighty is holding us responsible for our effort and not for the results. That's not up to us.
Right.
So we just have to figure out what our best effort is. And I think I heard recently that, you know, in marketing, they say that people have to have, you know, 8 different touches. Somebody just told me this, I can't remember, who told me this before, you know, before it makes
sense. 20
right, before it right. makes an impression on them. So it's up to us not to take it personally. Right, it's up because that's what really what's going to hold us back.
Oh,
right? It's up to
great!
Us. We recognize that.
Great.
That's
wait, hold on. Go on that note because I think that's a very important point. Why is experiencing it as a failure, yourself as a failure, holding you back from going forward and really doing what you want to do? What?
It makes you afraid, and you're not putting your best self out there because we then have all this brain space about how it's affecting us.
Mm-hmm.
Versus really what we're really trying to do and what our you know and what are all of our individual missions
this
are.
Therapy.
We want to put that out there, recognize it's not personal against us. People don't realize that Torah is important.
We don't want to fail again.
And that's why it's so important for us to be in all these different places so that people will get that. You know, sometimes, you know, I'll make these phone calls and I'll be calling people and emailing them and you know and they seem interested and then you keep going. You know, there's some people I just keep them on a list, and I'll say, you know what, once every 6 weeks, I'm going to get in touch with this person in some way, send them an email, something. It could take 3 years before, you know, and then they'll become from, or maybe it's going to be through somebody else, I think. Maybe Rabbi Edelstein or Rabbi Gottlieb had said it. You could have that touch with them, and then, you know, you're calling them, and nothing happens, and you feel like such a failure, and then 3 years later, somebody else, you know, you primed them so they were open to this other person. We're not in charge of the results. That's...
Say it again.
There are people that you're not necessarily going to put a tremendous amount of effort in because you see that they're not coming. But it doesn't. You can have a file of those people that you're not forgetting mm-hmm. about. That you're trying to touch here and there.
So do you organize the people in your sphere from people, the close contacts, the connections you were talking about, the people who you want to periodically?
In theory.
In theory.
I do have a file of people to contact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have ideas of how I'd like to make it more organized. But we do.
Let's open it. Hi, okay. Before you go, yeah.
Going when like this is happening. One of the things that I think that when we're in these kinds of leadership roles, and I
leadership role, is who feeds me? How do I get chizuk? And one of the things that maybe was mentioned before I came here, but I think is so important, is so it's recognizing, yeah, I have to make sure, I have to take responsibility to make sure that I am doing that for myself so that I can, that the rejection doesn't, destroy me. Like, if I'm putting into myself enough chizuk, and that could be in the form of giving myself shirim, it could be in the forms of the things I'm telling myself. Everybody's talking about different things you're telling yourself. It could be a Rebbetzin that you call when you're down, a mentor, we're going to be talking about a mentor program at lunch. Like, I personally found, I have I have my fetch friend. Okay? I have my friend that, and she doesn't have to be in the same city. But it's like, she's the person I can call and just say, this is my part of the program, now I'm writing my kids, when I've been down, okay? And she'll give me, and this is very important, a healthy type response. It's not enough to say something, but so it's important, I think, and this is what I wanted to point out, to spend the time. When you're feeling rejected and down and da-da-da, spend the time to, whether it's calling a friend, whether it's giving yourself a pet talk, but giving ourselves the time to keep ourselves going, the chazak ourselves, because there are so many negative, the rejections, the negative comments we get, the whatever it is, I think it's important to recognize the need for that and not see it as a failing, but see it as a positive trait that a leader needs to be able to develop in themselves in order to remain in that position.
It's great.
I need to ask a question.
Yes.
I know this is throwing everybody a little bit askew, but we're here to be creative. And I'm asking all of you for help because I'm my own program. And I'm hearing a lot of things from you, how to mechazik oneself and how to do this. But for me, I feel that, or I heard the statistics, there are about 1,500 care professionals in the United States. And that, to me, is terrifying. Because it means that there are 6 million Jews or whatever million Jews are here, and there's 1,500, and you're not going to touch everybody. The bottom line is we don't touch everybody. And I believe, at this point, we really need to work with the community. And I live in a very strong, relatively strong, from community in the five towns, Harakaway, Bayswater. And what I feel my job is I feel like a cheerleader. I want to enlist and enroll from people to help. Not that you're working there on the front by yourself, but that we're working as a team together. And if we feel that we're not alone and we need the support, we're there for you. And we're working with you. So this is what I get, and it's very troublesome for me. A lot of people, they come up to me and they said, I don't know any from people, any secular people. That to me is terrifying. The other thing is, it's not true, but they don't see it. And they don't come across it. It's not in their family. I don't know anybody. And I'm like, are you for real? That's one thing. Or I'm too busy. They have this grandchild. They go to this chasana. Like, I ain't interested is another very serious remark.
Say something that someone once said to me. Also something from your community. When I was in Florida, I was in Miami. She was on vacation. Oh, what do you do? I live up north. I'm doing here. Are you Chabad? No. Only Chabad does.
Right. I got another one like that.
I've had that question.
And I have a daughter who's in Chabad, and they feel like only they do it, and it's only for them. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling, it's not for you, what Project Inspire or this. It's for everyone. We want to touch every person. There isn't just the Chabadnets who go out here. And,
my only concern, because what you're saying is so true and so valid.
I need ideas.
Right. The only thing is, for this particular session,
this is not right.
What I would really like to focus on is not the global issue of the mandate of Kirov, although that is obviously the essential issue, but it's what's coming up for women, what's real for them, what's holding them back. As Ruth said, what's going on in their internal world that's keeping them from reaching out? Not
to negate. This will prevent them. If you understand your things and you can help me, I can sort of break through the barrier. I want to...
Yeah, right, because our time is so precious, and everything you're saying is so real. But yeah, Rohe.
So where would I go with this?
Okay, Rohe, how do you bridge it?
One of the things that we have done in our community to break down those barriers and bridge the topic is we create partners with the firm community to help us in our Kirov. In our Sunday school, we have a parent program, and once a month, a parent program is Partners in Torah. We tried doing a weekly Partners in Torah. We did not find that it was successful. It was too much for secular people. It was too much for firm people. People ended up canceling more than coming. So it's monthly, and we handpick, which solves the other problem for the parents. We handpick people in the firm community who we feel are kiddush Hashem and a role model and are able to communicate. It doesn't mean that they're perfect, and it doesn't mean that they won't make a mistake. There's been discussions about Obama. Okay. But we have found that A, relieves the burden of as far as follow-up, inviting people for Shabbos. I can't invite everyone in my community for Shabbos, but my partners in Torah can invite their partners in Torah and their partners in Torah's friends. So A, it relieves the burden. B, it builds bridges within the community of helping them see who you are, what you do, what it's like. Mm-hmm. So it makes more bonding. And three, it absolutely addresses what you're referring to, which is activating and sensitizing the firm community, enabling. They want, a lot of times, I have people who are like, send me people for Shabbos, and I'm like, my people are 35 and they have a beautiful house in Pepper Pike. They're not college kids who are looking for some free challenge. I'm not setting them up with a stranger. That's just not how it rolls with them. So they need a relationship, a friendship first, but they want to do cure of their well-meaning. Yeah. They just don't have the in. So this creates the in. And
so what you're saying is to filter what you have to them.
Not just to filter, to hand pick members of the firm community that are a Kiddush Hashem and invite them into your Kirov life. Invite them to a Shabbaton. Invite them to a class. Tell them, don't ask, the same way, I'm on a training call for the JWRP for the Women's Missions. They tell you, if somebody's giving, you're in Israel, somebody's giving a class, don't offer your own thoughts. Like, let them present their present. So I tell that to my firm people. I'm like, listen, don't raise your hand and ask questions. It's not what you're there for. And I'll tell them, when you come to my Shabbaton, don't wear a black hat. Don't come out of your room in a robe Shabbos morning. You look like a pilgrim. Just saying. Sometimes it feels a little touching, but that's how you build bridges. And I have to say, in our community, it's really, really been very useful.
Wow. So hand selecting and coaching a little bit to get to how to build. Yeah, great. Terrific. Okay.
I just wanted to go back to the communication thing again for a second. I think that it's also, everybody communicates differently, and I know sometimes people are not going to answer the text. I try very hard to ask each person, how do you want me to communicate with you?
So
and then I make a note, this one really doesn't answer, they're not going to call me back, they prefer to text. And just then the second thing is, maybe those people that are not coming, maybe there's another type of event, if you would ask them what type of
asking
event
them.
That they would...
What are you interested in? What would, how best can I communicate with
you? So
what's real for you? What's on your mind? What kind of classes would you want? It's also one thing that you're saying that, just to expand, is you're making them a partner in the process. They're not just the recipient. They're invested. You're making them active partners, that they have a role. You're respecting their Bahira and their intuitive intelligence to know what they, that's terrific, and just involving them in decisions.
Really working with, and the other people are, more peripheral, but there are going to be people that I'm really focusing on. Mm-hmm. But I think the key is really building relationships. Like, you know, this year I focused on one or two women that I was taking walks with, you know, consistently throughout the year. And it's not, I don't have this idea that I'm going to necessarily move them, but it's more making the relationship, and through the relationship, hoping that we'll grow together. Like, someone came to give us a class, I'm going to talk about it later when I present, but you know how long it takes to lose 5 pounds? You know how long it takes to change a meter? To think of a person going from 0 to 100, take Shabbos upon themselves, or take Kashrus. It's a huge, huge thing. And when we first moved to Palo Alto, we had, you know, FFB people, you know, who were part of our kolo saying, why are we doing anything? We haven't met anyone from yet, and no one put on a shekel yet, mm-hmm. and no one did this. And then it takes years for someone to become from. It doesn't happen from a single person. And I had this,
it's crazy to become from a single person.
I have to become from so many different directions and over years. So, you know, it's really making these personal connections, mm-hmm. and then it being real, not like, I know it's our job, right? But it's more than a job. It's our life, and it's our passion. It's I don't know how to explain it, but it's not just a job. It's mm-hmm. really making those relationships.
Great, yeah.
Like, even to add, she left already.
Shame.
Or we got like, how do you know, like, people aren't interested, or how you should, like, wean them out, okay? So, I think, like, if you just jot yourself, like, the person and what they do, ever have a question of something like you're looking into getting a car, they work with cars, call them.
That is bad.
It's so good. You make an excuse to call them, and then this way you're not asking them to come to class. You're just relating to them somehow. You're making some connection.
That's great.
And then, you know, hopefully over time, like, you talk to them. Also, I find that people, most normal people, they don't want to just keep coming to you. Like, they want to be able to give to you.
That's
and
so true.
So, like,
they
so
always want to invite you back.
I want to invite you back. Like, why can't I? Maybe I could, like, grill on my grill because I never wash it in my sink. Like, but doesn't have kosher meat on it. Right. Like, I didn't think of that. But they're constantly wanting to, like, do something for you. Like, they don't want to keep coming to your event. So, like, if you call them and try to, like, enlist their help in whatever way that they can help you. Like, you know, you want to buy a house and you want to know their opinion. What do you think? Every stupid thing, like, we'll just, like, we'll always, oh my gosh, you could call them. I'm like,
that's brilliant.
That's
brilliant. And, like, it's very aligned with what you're saying. It's really about building the relationship. And they don't want it one way. They don't want it one way.
I'm going with you when I was like 3 times. I'm like, I'm just building a relationship. Like, right now, I'm going for coffee and going to the mall. Like, I'm not asking her to learn yet. Like, I feel like it's, you know, like, right now, we're just going to have a good time together. Like, will I ever have an effect? I don't know. So maybe it's just by going out with her and her seeing you. But she's not, like, you're not learning with her. She's not going to come to your class. But she sees the way you act. She sees the way you dress. And she sees, you know, maybe that's going to do.
There's a couple of things. You're making the other person feel important. And you're validating them. Instead of saying, what I have is a value, you also have something of value. And that's, I think that's very key, is the person has to feel understood and has to feel validated and has to feel important, mm-hmm. and not just the receiver.
On the other hand, there is the, you know what you're talking about, that there's this global mission and there's so many people out there. Like, for instance, Lori Flatney came to our community for Shabbaton in October. And she made a connection Friday night with a woman there, an Israeli woman who's married to a completely secular style. She, you know, grew up in Central and Queens. She, you know, was completely secular. Her husband owns a nightclub, actually. And she's a Jewish guy, you know. So Lori said to me, Motzei Shabbos, we're going to the nightclub to go see this guy. And speak to him. And Lori and I walked into this nightclub.
That's so funny.
And she sat with him for like an hour. And he's like, I give you water, but I'm not giving you like a baby. There's like a restaurant nightclub thing. He's like, he knows the deal. So, and she was like, and she was just, it was the example that told me. She was so aggressive, like pursuing this guy and pursuing her family. And she said to him, you're learning with, my husband. She said to him, you're learning with Jenny's husband once a week from now on. He's going to come over here and he's going to come learn with you.
Did it happen, Jenny?
They learned, not once a week, but they have learned that he has progressed. And she said to him, you know, your kids are in the day school. The kids are in our day school. She said, your kids are going to come home. How are they going to respect you if you don't know as much as them? They're going to know more than you. How are they going to respect you and look up to you? And she was, like, very sure.
But it's kind of like what you just said.
And
it depends on the person.
Right.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
The high
hired God as Deborah said.
And it's also not necessarily a good idea for you to do that. But even if you were that
my husband
person,
teaches this
Lori
kid
can
son.
Come in.
So I wouldn't have done that 20 years ago either.
She wouldn't have, but she won't do it where I live. I live 2 miles from her. She won't do that where we are because she's got a continuing relationship with him. She wouldn't do that. So it's a different...
Right.
You know, I just want to add one thing. People, about you saying about people want to give back, they really do want to give back, and that sometimes holds people back, actually, from even coming to your house.
Right. Oh,
actually,
that's right.
There's a couple people that, like, one person just dropped off chicken at my house. Like, she went to the kosher store. It was fine. And I realized that this made her feel good. So on the one hand, I felt funny about it. Like, it's just strange that she's dropping off raw chicken at my house. I said to her, you know what? You have, you know, this chicken, you got the part of, like, having all of these people over. And I recognize there's certain people that feel funny continuing to come back if they can't get back. I actually recently told a family, if you want, you can get chicken. And they were so happy because I just thought, this person did it, and it really worked for them. You have to figure out what works for each.
That's a big lesson for those of us who are the givers, who beautiful. I think that is incredibly important.
It makes us much more effective because they feel like they're a part of what we're doing. They're not just takers.
And Ruth, like what you said, they might be saying no because they don't want to start the process of feeling like they owe you something. That might be where the no comes from. Okay, so wait. So how much time do we have? I just want to be conscious of time. What time is it now?
12:36.
Okay, so we have time. Okay, so I think Rachel was first.
First of all, just to add the 2 points about giving. So we never used to charge for our Friday night dinners or anything. And now our new couple that does the young adult dinners, so he started this thing and he said, like, everybody should come with either a bottle of wine or, like, he gives them choices. And he has more people than ever. So I think because of what you're saying, I think it's not money, so it's not cheap, you know, whatever. But people bring a bottle of wine. They know we have one kosher store with a kosher wine section, and so they know where to go. And people bring wine, or they bring a cake from Meadow Bakery, or we have a kosher bakery. So
no,
it's always the wine.
They're bringing their face wrap, bringing the wine, or bringing their cheese. And even if he gets more wine is never a problem in our community. And the truth is that
I have so much wine.
A lot of money.
Right.
And it's been really, really helpful. So, and it teaches people, because you really, especially in the young adult community, you have to teach people how to give.
Yes.
Great.
That's number one. Number two, I really want to go back to the thing about training our own firm people how to do cure. And really, through the JWRP, that's when it started, because all these women came back and they wanted to learn every week, because in order to be a majikha, you have to learn every week. And Lauren didn't have the first time, she just physically couldn't learn with every single one of the women. So we were forced to, we made a meeting in our community where we handpicked people to invite. We selected about 20 firm women, and I spoke to them about how I never thought that I was going to go into Kiruv, and and it just happened by mistake, and how much I love it. And for them, they can relate to me. I'm a basic Akubansi girl. I'm not like a, you know. And they really, they started to set up, we started to set up kavrusas.
Wow.
Some of them did not work out. Some people did not have seichel and said the wrong things, and it dissolved. But most of them stayed, and some amazing relationships developed. And we can't do it on our own. And now it became the in thing to learn with one of the ladies from Lauren's Israel trip. So we are making ways. We're trying.
Great. That's great. Okay. Yes, Rachel.
Okay. A couple of things. Just going back a little bit to the rejection question that SD had. So you had mentioned that, you know, sometimes I'm also flaky. So for me, it's the opposite. So for those of you who took Lori's personality class, I'm like a toto. Okay. So that means I'm like, I do answer my texts like every 5 seconds. I can't help it. I'm working on it. So it's hard for me because I really am that person who really, if I can't make it, I feel compelled to say I can't make it, and I even feel compelled to say why, which I don't always have to. And so when people do blow me off, I'm like, I don't get it. So one of the ways that I've made sense of this is to realize that I'm being judgmental. Hashem made me this way. He didn't make everybody this way. I have my faults. I want people to be nice to me when I'm exhibiting my faults, and so I have to work on my judgmentalism. So that's one thing that's helped me. Another thing that's helped me is I've realized in navigating in the non-firm world,
every nonprofit has this issue. It's not just a firm thing. Mm-hmm. Like, any nonprofit that's trying to get volunteers and trying to get people to get involved, it made me feel better, because I felt a little freakish. Like, hey, come learn Torah. Oh, no one's interested in learning Torah. But then I realized, you know what? The National Council of Jewish Women is dealing with this. The JCC is dealing with this. Everyone's dealing with apathy. Uh-huh. So it's not just me being a freak. This is called the human condition.
Uh-huh.
And that totally made me feel better about it, too. And then I just want to make some quick comments about the... giving back, because we found that's huge. So one of the things that we learned in our Sunday school, in our parent program, we have families that have been learning for 6 years, and now we have families that are brand new. And we were having a hard time. Like, we talked about dividing the group, and I was like, no, don't divide the group. So we kept them together. So what we're doing now is we're activating our people that have been learning for a while in allowing them to teach the things that they know. So let's say we had a panel about creation. And so we invited a doctor, one of the women in the crowd who's a doctor, to sit on panel and talk about medical miracles. Like, I'm not saying she believes in God. Like, you don't have to say it's from God, but things that just sort of were out of the purview of science explanation. She felt so good. These people are educated. They're proficient. They're accomplished. They come to your hearing, they feel like morons. They feel 4 years old. It doesn't feel good.
Mm.
You activate them to teach what they know.
Such interesting.
And even when you're saying the wine, you don't need the wine, big deal. There's this one woman who's like a Jewish art history major, or I don't even know what. She gives tours of the Malta Museum. Literally, people pay her $1,000 for this tour. And she offered to give a tour. Now, in my opinion, art tour, thanks. Anyway, but it's such an investment in her. Exactly.
Yeah.
We're so excited about this. It makes us look hip, cool, and classy, and she feels like $1 million. She feels like this is her way of giving back, and she feels so good about herself.
Mm-hmm.
She feels like her accomplishments are valued in the firm community.
It's such an interesting point that people feel like, here's something I don't know anything about, and like, you feel like you're 4 years old. Like, oh, wait, I don't know Aleph. You know, like, and, oh, and my kids are, like, spewing Torah at the table, and they're like, how did they know everything? They feel like they know everything. She's in first grade, you know? Yeah, she knows that. It's not everything.
Yeah.
So I have to say something about what Ruth said. So first of all, somebody also dropped with a chicken bite. somebody else that, like, just gave me, like, a $50 check, you know, because they didn't know what to bring. Or like, somebody else that every time they come, they have to bring, like, literally 5 shopping bags of, I don't know what, fruits and vegetables. And, you know, like, bottles of wine and chips and, I don't know, whatever. You know, just, like, the whole grocery store. And, like, it used to really bother me. I was like, you know, it's okay. You don't have to bring... Whenever they ask, I'm like, no, thanks. It's okay. But I learned on the JWRP trip, we went to Pamela Clayman's house, who's really wealthy and really exceptional. And one of my women came with a bottle of wine to Pamela, and I was wondering what she would say. And she said, I will accept it with the love that it was given. I was so touched by that. So, and that's my new line. I will accept it with the love that it was given. It was just so sweet. Okay, that's my new line.
Class grade.
Planned the Shabbaton for
that's a good
we thing. Had a Shabbaton in mind, and one of the things we noticed was we always get these people who come and they go back, they clean it, and they help us clean up, whatever. We're always telling them, like, it's okay, you can go.
Over the ones who...
Well, we couldn't have it for whatever other reasons, but, like, they were all really excited about coming. Mm. They felt like it was also their event. They're like, wow, thank you so much. And one of them called me, and she's like, I'm really so sorry that, like, you're not having the event, but I just want to let you know, please call me anytime if you just need me to volunteer. And it turned out we're having another event, so I said, actually, it's funny you should mention it. We're having an event. I need someone to sit at the front table and just, you know, you know, take money and greet people. She's like, I would love to. So it's like, if you give them these opportunities, and this is like one of these girls, she's not from, she ostensibly doesn't seem interested, she's very involved in her conservative show and whatever, but she loves coming to our events, she loves being involved, and she was so excited to like have a part in it. She's like, I get to greet people at the door, that's so nice. So
it's a real lesson.
Good about it.
It's a real lesson. Yeah, okay, yeah. Yes, yes, start list, yeah. Where are you?
Perfect children.
Amish Gardens.
Like,
oh, you're in.
No one is worse too, and they're very well behaved, and they're always dressed perfect. And I'm sure their houses are always perfectly clean and much bigger than mine. And like, you want to invite them, and they want to come, and then it's like, quickly clean up, and like, nobody take out any toys, and
it's
don't
tough.
Spill anything, and it's just like, then I can't have them because like, I don't want them to see.
How old are your reality? 7, 6.
Yeah.
And you, all right, keep it. Keep, all right. So what? Yeah. Keep going.
She has a lot of kids and a dirty house, and like I don't want that lifestyle. I mean, they know kids make messes, but there's like a limit. You know, when there's like so many Lego on the floor that you can't walk.
Right.
My kids don't keep it like in one spot over here.
Right. Right. Right.
I don't have a playroom. I move over there. Like.
So does it keep you from inviting people? Does it hold you back?
Yeah. Because then it's like this pressure.
Right. And you're not your best mom. You're right.
My kids are not perfect.
Right. Really?
We have a similar situation. We live in a community where everyone's very wealthy. They have very large, beautiful homes. We live in an apartment, which is like enough space for us, but like we don't have a playroom. I don't have my kids away. And I also used to have this complex that all these people who are used to everything being, and I'm like very neat and organized, but everyone is going to come to my house and feel that, like, you know, as soon as my kids start to play, like, before the meal, we try to clean up. And then during the meal, there's stuff everywhere. Like, nobody could walk. Like, this last shot, my husband said, be careful, there's probably 150 balls on the floor because my youngest loves balls. So we have, like, a million little balls on the floor. So he had to tell everyone, be careful. But it's funny because one time we had someone over who, they have one child. And they said, you know, it's like so nice to be in like a relaxed environment.
Wow.
In our house, it's like, you know, I always feel like I have to clean up. And I'm like very, the type, you know, people, like I'm the type, I always need everything very neat. But like, it just relaxed me and it changed my whole perspective. I'm like, you know what, if there's a mess, it's really not a big deal. And on some level, they appreciate that too, that you're just normal. You know, like
stress about the
cleanup.
Yeah,
it'll
be stressed.
Exactly. Ooh, that's you get
true.
Relaxed about it, and
that's
you,
true.
It takes a lot of avoda. It's not like an overnight, like snap your fingers and all of a sudden this will become your perspective. But for me, it was huge because I like everything very neat and organized. And like Lemaisa, my kids are kids. How am I going to keep them from, you know, playing? I want them to feel like, I also felt like my kids felt that stress in the beginning. Like that I was like, no, put them away. Don't take out too many toys. It's going to become too messy. Like they're going to get nervous or whatever. Mm. And at the end of the day, like my house sometimes, like it's flying. They're like, we live on the ground floor of an apartment building. So, like, my kids are driving their scooters through the lobby, outside, like, around. And I'm always so nervous that we're going to get in trouble or something. And people are like, you know what? It's so nice to see, like, kids. Vibrancy of children. And they're, like,
they actually perceive, you know, it. It sounds like what you're saying is they perceive it as the very opposite of what you might be experiencing.
Sometimes, I don't know.
There's dirty and squalor. And then there's
Legos
all over.
I mean, the Shabbos table is, like, grape juice. And, you know, it's, like, it doesn't look pretty.
Wait a minute. But what's all I'm saying? I mean, it might be your perceptions, and it might actually not be the way they're perceiving
it. Because we think, like, and like Ruth was saying, if you're stressed about it, so they pick up on
they pick up on the stress.
If you're relaxed, they're like, wow, she's so relaxed. It's so nice, you know. People like
people actually live here as opposed to my museum. Where, no,
and when they came in, right? When they came in, there was not grape juice on the table, and there weren't crowds on the table.
They know that they're on time,
and now they see there's kids living, so they're not. They're not thinking of you that you can't. The house you have a lot of little kids. And people do appreciate that.
I'm like naturally disorganized and spaced out, and my house is usually a mess. I mean, it's not really like a mess. Well, yeah, maybe. Being brushy, it's
don't
a mess. But anyway, people love, they love just chilling out. They know my husband's going to get up in the middle of the meal and go on the couch. And, you know, like, they love that they can just go to the fridge by themselves and get what they want. And I'm like, please, you know, just
please make yourself comfortable because I don't know how to deal with anything other than that, you know? And, like, so, like, especially, like, young, like, single people love the chilled outness and, like, that they don't have to be sitting like this.
It's a really important point you're making. I mean, that it's really
right.
True.
But see, I have, like, people come with little kids, right?
Sorry, it's a huge.
It's like they have one or two little children that they never, they're always watching them.
Right.
Yes.
Like, not always watching my children. You know, pretty much good. But like they'll go upstairs and play, and then they feel like they're watching my children for me.
Or they
like, I don't watch my children when
they're don't watch their children because they have so many and they just let their kids do what they want. That's I think the point that you're
right. And then like I'm downstairs entertaining the other people and they're upstairs watching my kids. Or I don't know what my kids are doing.
It sounds like a parenting.
Yeah. Okay. So Rachel and Sarah.
I just want to say, first of all, that I grappled with this for many years. I don't even know if I'm finished yet.
My daughter
can't
have
time.
And Lauren Schatz helped me through this because I did not want to do Friday night dinners anymore. I'm also a very naturally neat person, and it made me crazy. And it wasn't even so much the cleanliness, but my kids, as they start getting older, what are they going to say? How are they going to behave? What if they don't listen? And then they're going to say, oh, from people. Is that right? So I had all of this. So first of all those things that you're thinking, they're saying, they're now thinking those things. That's your projection, okay? Second of all, Lauren told me a great thing. She said, Rachel, this is the best lesson for them. They don't need to see your kids behaving. What they need to see is how you respond to them.
Oh, beautiful.
Okay?
Beautiful.
How do you respond to the mess? Do you get all stressed out, like she's saying? Or do you say, like, Baruch Hashem, I have kids. You know, one of the most successful Kiruv people in Philadelphia, her house, Kananaharo, was flying with lots and lots and lots of kids. They are by far the most successful people. And she always used to say, you know, people say, how do you keep your lawn is so messy outside. She said, I raise children, not grass. And, you know, I think that it's important if you just say, they feel it. And so, you know, if your kid misbehaves at the table, that's good, that's real life. And let them see, how do you handle that? Do you go crazy and scream at them? Or do you say, you know, whatever, you know,
such a true point.
Whatever it is, they'll say, you know, parenting skills, they learn, you know, organizational skills, they'll learn all these things. They don't see it in these regular from home. And we also have people with one or two kids, and they come with their, I know it can be in their culture, good for them to see. That's not good for kids. Let them see that that your kids be independent and go play in the other room. It's good. It's all good for them to see. Don't feel embarrassed of it. It's good.
Beautiful. That is so helpful.
Super. Reality show when people are in the house and their kids in reality show.
But Rachel, something you said that just has to be reiterated. They're not looking at the children's behavior. They're looking at your response to the children's behavior. That is... which is the only thing in your control anyway, so you might as well not focus on the other
one. Really
that is so powerful. That resonates.
Friday night dinner, that was from Lauren Schaff, who's not here because her son's getting married in a week.
And her daughter's getting married in
2 months.
And to remember that this fancy lady with her one kid who she's monitoring, she can learn from you. But there's something to learn from you. Right, that's something very powerful to learn about this, you know. That's great. That's really wonderful. Okay, now, Sarah, you want to say something?
We were having a Shabbos meal, and we were trying to focus on one of our guests, and my daughter kept saying, Mommy, Mommy, Mommy. I was trying to, like, listen to the guest. He said, stop talking to me. Listen to the thing.
I had that. Isn't that the word?
I was trying to be nice to him.
Now you're embarrassed.
And it really refocused me, and it made me realize, you know what, he has a point there. And it chilled me out. Like, the guests don't need so much attention. Focus on the kids. You got to focus on your kids. And I know that at the beginning of our meal, we try to focus on the kids at the beginning because that's when they're sitting down. And then the guests just sit and listen. And then once after the first course, the kids run around and play. And then you can focus on
what a lesson.
Kids.
What a lesson. They don't want you to give them inordinate amounts of attention. They want to see you focusing on it.
They want to, like, step back and watch the show.
A lady came to my house, and we had a house.
I want to watch
the show. But she takes a broom, and she starts sweeping my kitchen. And At first I was very intimidated, like, why is she sweeping my kitchen? And then I just said to myself, Sarah, this is not a big deal. Your kitchen was pretty clean to begin with. There's a little bit of this. You know, let her sweep your kitchen. So I made some very cute comments. She's like, you know, my husband said I was born with a broom in my hand. And she swept my whole kitchen. She's like, go, make it. It's just okay. I'll just finish up over here.
Can I have a number?
And then she picked up all the toys, swept the whole Shabbos room, got the whole, she goes, I know you're glowing tonight. I want to make sure everything's clean before you leave. She, for 45 minutes, she was cleaning up after the meal. That made her happy.
We have a guest every single time.
Yeah.
Yes.
The first thing, first of all, in terms of focusing on the kids, like, I find that I'm always telling my husband and refocusing him, like, telling him, like, you have to focus on our, like, and I feel like on this, like, which, like, I'm constantly saying, like, you have to focus on our kids, like, you're focusing on everybody else, but, like, they'll be fine if you focus on our kids. Like, our kids read the parts questions. Like, no one will care. Like, I find that, like, it's important also for